Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everybody. So Alex Rodriguez has been suspended for all of this coming baseball season for using performance-enhancing drugs and attempting to block Major League Baseball's investigation of him. It's the longest suspension for doping ever handed out in baseball. And since he sued the Players Union and MLB to try to get the suspension overturned, this is now in court at A-Rod's hand. Details of the independent arbitrator's decision that shows his carefully detailed doping regimen have been released to the public as part of the legal proceedings. They were otherwise confidential. So one question I have after seeing the early reports of this, do all the doping players do this much stuff? Our next guest is the investigative reporter for the New York Times sports section, Steve Eater, rhymes with Jeter. Steve, welcome to WNYC. Hi.
Thank you very much for having me.
So these eye-popping details of A-Rod's performance-enhancing drugs diet that have just been released, I mean, it's pretty gross and intense if it's all true. For anyone who hasn't read the reports, where would you start with a thumbnail version of a typical day or week, if that's a better frame, in A-Rod's alleged dope diet?
Well, you know, it's where do you begin on this thing? It's really interesting. I mean, the detail that we got from the report from Frederick Horowitz, the independent arbitrator in the case, provides some sense of an official layout of what Alex Rodriguez was up to, at least as Horowitz saw it. Phase one of the Rodriguez plan included subcutaneous substances and intramuscular injections, and this is all laid out. I guess it comes from testimony from Tony Bosch, who was the guy who ran a clinic, who was working with Rodriguez to put these types of substances into his body.
I love, by the way, how they call Bosch's clinic an anti-aging clinic. For one thing, you can't stop aging. For another thing, what a cover.
Yeah, the anti-aging thing has been, this world where, you don't know exactly how some of these things operate. And for Bosch, which was interesting, was that he actually isn't a doctor. He's not a licensed doctor. He had some medical training, but he's not a doctor. And so here you have a guy who was wearing a white lab coat that said Dr. Tony Bosch on it, but not really a doctor, and working with a number of Major League Baseball players, involved in this case.
And all these different things, these creams and injections and pills, and who knew there was such a thing as testosterone lozenges that you could suck on before a game? I certainly didn't. Did you?
No. I mean, a lot of this is new to me, and I think was new to a lot of people, all the different ways that you go about in seeing a purported doping protocol laid out like this.
How much of this stuff can anyone buy walking into a local GNC or something?
That's a good question. I mean, I think some of it you can. You see stuff on here like vitamin C and amino acid, and there are things that, there's sports nutrition, just more generic kinds of things. Other things like testosterone, HGH, some of those things are, I don't know exactly how easy it is to get some of those.
So one of the big questions that I have, as I set up in the intro, is this routine for a doping baseball player? Or how much of a freak is A-Rod, if this is all true, compared to his fellow ball players who might also use performance-enhancing drugs?
Well, we don't know. It's really, it's one of the things about this in the last couple of days after seeing the Horowitz report, is that if this is all true, what it presents is almost an unprecedented level of unprecedented look into what doping might look like, and that's really interesting. It's hard to say. Is this what others, even working with Tony Bosch, were doing, or others who have been involved in doping in different sports? Clearly there's quite a bit here to look at. Is this a one size fits all for all the different athletes out there who have used performance enhancing drugs? I don't know. That's a good question, and maybe one day we'll find out.
So listeners, we're opening up the phones for your calls on these revelations, or at least allegations, about A-Rod, their findings as far as Major League Baseball and its arbitrator is concerned. I don't think a lot of this would have held up in court, so on some level they're allegations, but they are also findings, and there's a lot of evidence here. And Steve Eater, rhymes with Jeter, investigative sports reporter for The New York Times, has been looking into it. So you can talk about A-Rod sort of pro or con. I know people are, you know, all over the place on whether he's getting too big a rap, too big a punishment compared to other players, whether MLB is getting off too easy itself, whereas Bud Selig's suspension, which is a very good question as far as I'm concerned, but also some of the details of the doping regimen. And I wonder if there are coaches out there, if there are athletes or former athletes who have a reaction to this. If you know this world, if you've done anything yourself along the way at whatever level of sports, or if you know people who have, when you hear these details, are you like, yeah, well, you know, that's what they do? Or, oh my God, A-Rod is such an outlier, such a freak, even compared to the other steroid-using baseball players. What do you think about all this if you know something about it from inside any of these, you know, tangent world, adjacent worlds? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Steve, I know a lot of what upsets people is – oh, and by the way, I should say, listeners, right now that we put the documents on our website so you can see these – A-Rod lawsuit documents, including the list from the baseball arbitrator of what they determined that he used, this, you know, eye-popping, pill-popping, skin-popping list at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and of course you can leave a comment there as well. What one of the reasons that people get so upset about PED, Steve, is I don't have to tell you, is that it's one thing if professional athletes use them to cheat, or that that becomes, in a way, the new standard. But it also messes with people's health. So it becomes a risk to young athletes who are tempted to use steroids when they see all these bulked up ball players and everything else. And it actually also becomes a health risk to the other pro athletes, their colleagues, who don't want to have to use this stuff and take those risks in order to be competitive. And I think that's why the unions ultimately have been getting behind crackdowns on PEDs to protect the health of the majority of their members. But do you think in the larger scheme of things that this wouldn't be as big a deal, that the public wouldn't care, that Major League Baseball wouldn't care, that the law wouldn't care, if it wasn't potentially threatening to their long-term health?
I think that's certainly part of it. The long-term health of the players is certainly a big aspect of this. There's a lot of concern about that. There are other factors, though. I mean, there's the discussion about the integrity of the game. You hear that a lot, and being a fair playing field for all the players out there. And so I think there's a multitude of issues involved.
Right, but without the health threat, technology marches on. You know, for example, some people say it's hypocritical to be so upset about substances that people take because people use, you know, the newest vitamins, the newest whatever is legal. Players get LASIK eye surgery so that they can have 20/15 vision or whatever to see a fast-moving baseball. So there's got to be something that puts this form of performance enhancement over the top.
Well, there's something about the record book, too, that I think plays a role here. Tony Bosch was on 60 Minutes the other day on Sunday discussing the case. And he said the one thing that Rodriguez told him, if you believe what Tony Bosch is saying, was that some of this was motivated, some of this activity, which Alex Rodriguez completely denies. We should say that again and again. That some of this activity was motivated by his want to reach 800 home runs, to totally shatter the all-time home run record. And so there are some of these factors. There's the health issues that come involved, you know, in a situation like this. But then you also just see the competitive aspect. You see players in some cases late in their careers, you know, within shot of these incredible landmarks. And there are, you know, a multitude of factors in there.
Richard in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Richard.
Good morning, Brian. Good morning to your guest as well, too. I am a competitive weightlifter, and I do use steroids, and I do use testosterone. The regimen for Alex Rodriguez is extreme, but it's not anything that's completely off the charts. I would like to comment on one thing you said as far as age reversal. Age reversal is a reality. There are two things called your biological age and your chronological age. And I know personally that I am now younger now at 44 than I was at 24, due to partially my vitamin supplement, a vegetarian diet, and following the advice of Dr. Gary Null. As far as called the Tony Bosch and a medical doctor needing to wear a white coat. I believe that as a society, we are overvaluing the importance of an actual medical degree because mainstream medicine makes a lot of mistakes as well, too, and we shouldn't really put all our faith in someone just because they're a qualified doctor. I also agree with your guest that a lot of it has changed because of this chase for the records. These are extreme substances. You can just tell by players such as Barry Bonds. Roger Clemens is a good example, too. He was ready for retirement, and then he got traded to the Toronto Blue Jays, started visiting various clinics, and all of a sudden became buffed up and got another couple hundred wins. So I think that these extreme regimens probably should be banned from baseball, as I think baseball was a little more innocent back in the day. I was watching some old Pittsburgh Pirates videos. I saw Kent Tucholsky, and they saw that they don't have players like this anymore. These guys are thin, but they concentrate more on the baseball skills than just on the power, the muscles, and, of course, even more importantly, the advertisements on their uniforms and in the stadiums. Thank you.
Richard, thank you. Tell me real quick, Richard, what's one actual measure that you could state out loud by which you are younger today than you were a year ago?
I have a full head of hair. I've grown a full tooth back. I've grown 2 inches in my 40s, which is unprecedented. I don't get sick. My skin is perfect, and I look better now than I did when I was 25.
Richard, thank you very much. Wow, Steve Eater, you should do an investigation on that. Can somebody grow 2 inches in their 40s, grow back a lost tooth, and regrow hair? Whoever invents that is going to be the next billionaire.
That is fascinating.
Before we take another call, you know, I've been listening to Mike Francesa on Yes and WFAN rail against MLB and Commissioner Bud Selig and say A-Rod should only get a 50-game suspension like any first-time user because officially this is his first offense, even though he once admitted using performance-enhancing drugs in the past. So Selig is just trying to clean his own reputation, the theory goes, by making people remember that he stuck it to A-Rod rather than remember that he enabled the whole steroids era. He was for it before he was against it. Does the evidence bear that out?
Well, this is how Horowitz put it, and this is the quote. He said, "While this length of suspension may be unprecedented for an MLB player, so is the misconduct he committed." Horowitz explains in the report that, you know, his belief and his calculation is based on, you know, his sense that Rodriguez had been using banned substances, you know, over a period of multiple years, and multiple banned substances were involved, plus the sense that he agreed with the allegation to some degree that you know, Rodriguez had also interfered with Major League Baseball's investigation. For Horowitz, when he put that all together, he felt that a full season plus the postseason would be a fair, an adequate punishment for Rodriguez.
Assessment as an investigative reporter of the quality of the evidence as you've been able to see it? And, of course, you haven't been able to see the original evidence, but apparently there were many text messages, many phone calls between A-Rod and Bosch. But on the other hand, Bosch has no credibility. A-Rod has no credibility, but Bosch has no credibility. Even Major League Baseball arguably has no credibility. The Yankees want to get rid of him for salary purposes. So what's your independent assessment, as far as you can actually tell, of how much is rock solidly there?
Well, you know, look, I don't know if there's anything in this that's completely rock solid. It's been the type of story that I've been, you know, involved in covering it, and a lot of other journalists have too, for close to a year now. And there's always been difficulties in the reporting and trying to figure out where the truth lies. That's the case in a lot of stories, and it's been the case here. The issue, I think, that one of the things that you see in this report from Horowitz that is really for the first time you see Bosch's testimony matched up with his clinic notes as well as BlackBerry messages. And you take these different types of evidence and you put them together, and that's what Horowitz has done to draw his conclusions. He also says that he felt that Bosch was direct, as he testified, and credible. You know, at the same time, he also refers to Bosch as a drug dealer at one point in his report. So, you know, who do you believe and how much do you believe, and can you take any one witness on their own here? It's really tough. It's a really, really tough one. And Alex Rodriguez and his representatives believe that this was totally biased, totally unfair. We shouldn't, we shouldn't take this report as the final say. So it's still, you know, this still is hard to totally say this one version of events is correct. But the Horowitz report does have the benefit of being able to take the words, the notes, and the text messages, putting them together in one place to provide a timeline for us. And that's a lot of what we did in the story that ran.
Is there any one text message that's as much of a smoking gun as time for a traffic jam in Fort Lee?
Well, there was an exchange that between Rodriguez and Bosch, that is, if you believe these text messages, these BlackBerry messages are real, Rodriguez is becoming concerned that, you know, about the language that they're using. He doesn't want people to detect that they're having these discussions. And Bosch says something in a message to Rodriguez, according to these documents, that he was going to go pick up his quote-unquote meds. Bosch was going to pick up Rodriguez's meds. Rodriguez writes back, quote, "Not meds, dude, food." And food was part of this language that Horowitz describes, where Bosch and Rodriguez had come up with other terms to sort of disguise the type of substances that were being exchanged. So it's messages like that are interesting, that kind of jump off the page at you.
And Bosch tells them how to dodge a drug test in some of these communications, right?
Yeah, there was one where there was going to be a urine test. They thought in April 2012 there was possibly going to be a urine test looming. And so Bosch had offered, according to these documents, offered instruction to Rodriguez through a message that says wait the longest you can and don't use the pink until after. So, yeah, there were these types of messages that were being exchanged where, you know, this is how you can avoid getting caught here. And, you know, that was one of the things here. There's not, you know, as far as I know, there's not a failed drug test by Alex Rodriguez in this case, and he was tested numerous times.
212-433-WNYC, as we talk about issues raised by the latest developments in the A-Rod case, 212-433-9692. Anybody else, like our first caller, who has actually used some of this stuff? What about the extent of the regimen that's been revealed, or at least alleged, by the arbitrator now, not just by his antagonists, that A-Rod was involved with? Is this what people do, or is this, you know, a crazy outlying extreme regimen, even for professional athletes and others who do use performance-enhancing drugs? 212-433-9692, 433-9692. If you know anything from the inside about that, we have lots of other calls, and we'll take Lee and Wayne next. Hi, Lee, you're on WNYC.
Hey, good morning, Brian. The whole case is somewhat baffling to me in that I don't know of anybody other than Rodriguez who might have achieved the financial success and celebrity that he has. He's sort of the face of baseball. I met him at a celebrity golf tournament in Florida once. I'm a professional golfer. He couldn't have been a nicer guy. But when I went through some of those texts, and one in particular jumped out at me about how, you know, something to the effect of, wow, you know, that really jacked me up or zoomed me or, you know, anybody with half a brain, you know, doesn't need a lot of, that to me just jumped off the page. And I think he's got a responsibility, A, and B, an opportunity to, and I know this probably isn't going to happen but to be the guy that maybe, you know, turns this around and takes a year off and goes out, starts counseling, you know, athletes, be it high school or collegians, about the dangers of steroid use and why, you know, and to take that route. I think it would do more for the legacy, his financial future, and certainly the respect of the fans and anybody that has anything to do with professional sports.
Lee, thank you for your call. It would be nice to think that might happen, that A-Rod might get to that point, but Steve Eder from the New York Times,
yeah.
I mean, he is so far from that right now. Other players who've been caught up in the Bosch stuff have admitted it. They've expressed regrets and remorse, at least publicly. Maybe they'll go on to do that. A-Rod is denying everything.
Yeah, the other players that have been involved here are going to be getting ready for spring training pretty soon and playing baseball next season, and have moved in a lot of ways moved beyond this. Some of the players have gotten new contracts, you know, rich new contracts from new teams who, you know, move past. This is very much a live story around Alex Rodriguez.
Right.
You know,
how do you understand the fact that he denies everything when there's all this evidence? Again, I know this is not at the level of what would be admissible in court, so much of this, because so much is tainted by Major League Baseball's relationship with Bosch, and they apparently paid him, and he's, you know, got a past record that makes him not a credible source. But then again, there's all this written evidence like text messages. So considering how much is there, how do you understand A-Rod just making a blanket denial?
Well, there's a few points, I guess, that the Rodriguez Fed brings up, and they challenge the science. They say, how do you pass all these drug tests? Repeatedly pass all these drug tests, and still have been on a protocol such as this.
What's the answer to that question? Is there an answer to that question? Because I've been wondering about that. Do you know through your investigative reporting, or do they release when A-Rod actually has been tested during his time as a Yankee, or the time covered by this report, which is, I guess, 2010 to 2012?
You know, no, I don't believe so. From going back, I'd have to, you know, but the they do refer, like, that exchange over, the potential looming test. I mean, he clearly was tested. I think it was 11 or 12 times that's been discussed.
11 or 12 times. Would that be typical for a Major League Baseball player, 11 or 12 drug tests?
I don't want to say. I actually don't know the answer to that. So I don't want to.
But
don't wanna,
do they all know. Get tested at least once a year?
I think they're, yeah. I mean, they do have a regular testing program, and I'm not sure if there was any factors that would have caused Rodriguez to be tested. It's not an area.
So how could you use this much stuff and never turn up positive in an official drug test?
Well, there's some science to it that I think, you know, there's some different ways of that people think about it, and people who have more of a science head and a chemistry background probably could explain it better. But, there are ways. I mean, that's part of what Tony Bosch, presumably was being hired for, was to help not only provide various substances but also to avoid detection. That's been the claim that's been made, and he was, you know, was clearly coaching, based on these documents at least, was clearly coaching Rodriguez on that point.
But if he could successfully coach Alex Rodriguez to test negative for performance-enhancing drugs with the regimen that's now been revealed, that means Major League Baseball's drug testing program is completely ineffective, doesn't it?
Well, there are some things, and Horowitz gets to it in the report, where he says that certain substances that are not weren't tested under because the tests don't exist or aren't sufficient enough, that they aren't actually tested under the program. So, you know, that's probably part of it. But also, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, it does raise a lot of questions that you're able to, if this regimen is true, that you'd be able to keep that up and avoid detection. I mean, it's a fair question that people are asking.
Let's get a few more callers in here. Katie in Hillsboro, you're on WNYC. Hi, Katie.
Hi. I'm calling because my husband receives testosterone treatments, and I know you made a comment about these youth clinics, and the truth is, like, there are real people in the real world who take these drugs because they change your life. You know, as you get older, you lose testosterone and you lose strength. And my husband's 30 and he has the testosterone of a 70-year-old man. And I think that people don't look at how the difference between people who are using these drugs to change your performance in sports versus those who are using it to change their life so they can still work and provide for their families. And I really get concerned about the legislation that's going to happen around these things and how it will affect people who need this.
You think the legislation, I mean, it's of course a great point to draw the distinction, in case people don't understand it, between actual medical therapeutic use of testosterone or anything and the way people might abuse it for, you know, performance enhancement in sports or something like that. Is the law that's being considered, I guess, in the New Jersey legislature going to potentially restrict your husband's therapeutic use?
It makes it much, much more challenging to continue to stay on treatment, and it's very important to stay on to stay level on these things. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't just stop taking it for a while.
Am I right that that's a New Jersey bill, or is that a federal bill?
You know, I can't remember. I know there's a lot going on, and my husband would know more. But, you know, I've seen the difference it can make for your daily life and ability to function. And I just don't think people hearing all this around A-Rod and all these other sports people, like, that this is... It's a bigger issue than just how it's used in sports.
I understand. Well, thanks for bringing it up and clarifying why they might legitimately call something like this anti-aging therapy. So, Katie, thank you.
And a lot of these clinics, they know more, and maybe they're not as reputable, but they also know more than some of the doctors who are only dealing with, you know, the geriatric crowd.
Thank you, Katie. So, I really appreciate your call. Good luck to you and your husband. And Robert in Manhattanville, you're on WNYC. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Brian. I just want to say this. I think Jay Tacopina, A-Rod's lawyer, was on The Fan. I don't know if he was on with Mike or another show. But he was talking about how the fact that the arbitrator, and I don't know if it was Maurer, but one of the ball players, had an arbitration, and because of evidentiary issues, the arbitrator found against Major League Baseball and did not suspend the particular ball player, that within a month or two, that arbitrator was fired by Major League Baseball, terminated. So that would constitute, I think, as a legal matter, a basis to explore duress or things like not a impartial process under the collective bargaining agreement.
That's interesting. Are you a lawyer, by the way?
I am, Brian, and I just want to say this. I always advise my clients when they're entering into a contract. Now, I do arbitrations as well as litigation, but sometimes they call on me for a review of a contract. I say never put in an arbitration clause. You don't have an appeal, and the rules of evidence and cross-examination and discovery are not present. And so I think one has to take those two factors, the impartiality or the duress factor, and then the rules of evidence and the what we call the check in a litigation appeal and review into account on assessing the decision of the arbitrator.
Right, because what the conventional wisdom is, and I guess you're saying as a lawyer you think it may not be right, that because this is all being done in the context of a collective bargaining agreement, that the courts would tend to stay out of it, that what traditionally happens is the workers, as well as the owners, give up their right or their privilege to go to civil court by entering into a contract that they both agree with. That becomes sort of the legally controlling document, and this whole procedure was taking place under that document in the case of A-Rod, and so the courts would be conservative in terms of interfering. There would have to be something really unfair within the collective bargaining agreement or a breach of the collective bargaining agreement in order for the courts to get involved. But if you're saying that the role of the arbitrator as biased potentially toward the Major League Baseball side might be the issue, isn't the arbitrator approved by both the league and the union under the rules?
Well, you know, two things. I don't know enough about this particular process under the CBA of Major League Baseball. But the question would then go to that, something you mentioned, I think, a little earlier. Under the CBA, all A-Rod could get would be 50 games. At most, and even then, he wasn't tested positive. So the question is, did the arbitrator exceed the scope of his
authority under the contract?
Correct.
Robert, I'm going to leave it there because our time is running out, but that's a whole other interesting legal conversation. Steve Eder, do you want to weigh in on that? And then we're going to be out of time.
Well, there's a few things in there. One point was, I think what you're referring to there is the Ryan Braun case, where the arbitrator, a longtime arbitrator in that who heard that case, was basically removed after the case was over. In baseball,
Braun basically got off on a technicality.
Well, the arbitrator in baseball is appointed by the union and by MLB. You know, had a number of conversations about this with both sides. Did that case present some kind of looming threat for arbitrators in baseball, that if you don't rule the way, you know, one of the sides wants you to, you're going to lose your job? Could go either way, right? Because from a public relations standpoint, it wouldn't look good if one of the sides were getting rid of the arbitrator every time they didn't rule how you wanted.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I don't know, you could think about it a couple different ways, but that's been an interesting thing that's been in the backdrop. Obviously, Braun ends up getting caught up in this case later. You know, and then in terms of this 50 games, first offense, it's one of the great debates that's going to keep going on related to this, even after all of this evidence and the Horowitz report, if you believe it. There's still this debate over whether 50 games was fair, even with all of that, because that's what first-time offenders get. That debate's not going to go away anytime soon. And you should also note that in this lawsuit that Rodriguez has filed to vacate the Horowitz decision, he has taken aim at his own union and criticized the representation that he got from the baseball union, which was, you know, a real, you know, to some took that as being a really tough thing to swallow to see that. But you know, it is there's a lot of pieces to this that are going to keep playing out in the courts. And
I guess so. When do you expect the decision? I guess they'll have to decide before spring training next month.
Yeah, well, yeah, the federal court will have a few weeks here where I think Major League Baseball and the other parties will be able to respond to the suit. But you know, it's. What we should know before the season, I think, or at least get a sense of where this is heading, but it could take a period of months to play out. You know, ultimately, what we've been hearing and the reporting I've done and talking to a number of lawyers about this, it is a pretty high bar for the Rodriguez lawyers to get a federal judge to step in here and to vacate the Horowitz decision, but we will see.
My guest has been investigative sports reporter for the New York Times, Steve Eder, rhymes with Jeter. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and still to come, skyscrapers from the super tall to the mega tall. Can they be attractive? Can they be a force for good? And then Mo Rocca will join us to close out the show. Stay with us, Brian Lehrer on WNYC.